We've had a magnificent Shabbos with Rabbi Lieberwitz. We've asked him to talk about...
This is big. Whatever you want.
Yes, that's big.
We've asked him to talk about a fascinating topic called the being committed to Das Torah and yet being modern Orthodox. And modern Orthodoxy and Das Torah. So without any further ado, Rabbi.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Rabbi Maskin, and thank you again, Alison and Evan, for opening your home up to Torah and for having a shtender. It's very rare to find in a home that there's a... Whenever I'm speaking at home, I'm just... It's a little harder for me because I always have papers. Because as I pointed out, I'm not so smart. I'm not able to remember things so well. I always need notes to work with. This is a topic I've never spoken about before, and it's interesting. It's a very interesting topic. Das Torah from a modern Orthodox perspective. I'm working with, just to let you know in advance, I'm working with three data points, essentially. One data point is whatever I've heard from my Rebbe, Rav Schechter, on this topic, which is not very much, at least as far as I can remember, a little bit. A second data point is a drasha that a hesped that Rav Soloveitchik gave in 1940 when he was a member of the Aguda. As a 37-year-old rabbi, he spoke at the Aguda convention and was invited to give a hesped for Rav Chaim Ozer, who was considered at that time the Gadol Hadar and was someone that Rav Soloveitchik had a relationship with. And the third data point are the writings or the write-ups of the lectures of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, on the topic. So I'm sure there's more out there, but I'm just putting it out there at the beginning. These are my data points. That's all I really have. And I'd like to go through it one by one, you know, in that order, essentially. What I heard from Rav Schechter, what Rav Soloveitchik said in 1940, why I believe that that is still accurate, and it's not, there are a lot of very smart people who believe that whatever Rav Soloveitchik said in 1940 was a reflection of what he believed as a 37-year-old, but that that clearly changed later on in his life, and that his ultimate beliefs are not at all accurately reflected in that hesped, in that eulogy. Rav Schechter believes that his views did not change on this topic, and I don't think there's any evidence, there's any strong evidence at least, that his views changed if we understand it properly. And then to go through some of the points that Rav Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, made as well. So, to, by way of introduction, the term Das Torah is somewhat of a new term, meaning what does Das Torah mean in our society? So the way people typically view the concept of Das Torah is that if you have any question about anything, not only about halacha or about commentary of Torah or understanding Torah on a more deep level, any question about anything, should I take this job? Should I marry this person? Any question about anything in the world, so the most qualified person to help you answer that question or to paskin for you is a gadol b'Yisrael, is a gadol b'Torah. That's the concept as it's used today. Now, that is not a concept, certainly in that form, that is not a concept that appears anywhere, as far as I know, in Chazal, in Rishonim, or even really in Achronim, in earlier Achronim. To the concept of Das Torah used in that, the words appear, the words Das Torah appear in the Gemara, but it means something entirely different. The Gemara in Perek Gid HaNashe, in Maseches Chulin, has a discussion whether the Gid HaNashe, that is the vein that you're not allowed to eat, the sinew, whatever it is on one side of the animal or both sides of the animal, meaning are both Gidin prohibited or is only on one side of the animal that it is prohibited? And the Gemara says, it comes to a conclusion, and the Gemara says, well, is that conclusion reached by Das Torah or Das Nota? So what does it mean in that context? Das Torah in that context means, is there a pasuk that says it? Meaning, if there's a pasuk that says it, then that's Das Torah. Das Nota means with our own understanding, our own intuition, our own scientific research to be able to figure it out. So it's almost, not almost, the term Das Torah as it's used in the Gemara means the exact opposite of the term Das Torah as it's commonly used today. So it's, you know, we could easily talk about Das Torah, but we would just be talking about looking at things in Chumash and how to derive halachas from that which it says in the Torah. But I don't imagine that's what people wanted to talk about. I assume the topic that we were meant to discuss is the way that it's used today, not the way that the Talmud uses the term Das Torah. I recall I have a friend who learned in a yeshiva in Queens called Shara Torah, which was started, I mentioned last night, started by Reb Zelig Epstein, Zichrono Livracha, who's a very, very wise man. He was best friends with Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, even though he was almost, I think, 20 years his junior, but he was known to be an exceptionally wise person. And Reb Zelig Epstein I've spoken to other people that learned in Shara Torah who have confirmed this story. It's a known story around Shara Torah that someone asked Reb Zelig, that I think there was a documentary that came out about the Mir Yeshiva and their escape to Shanghai and all the decisions that had to be made. Should they go? Shouldn't they go? Should they just stay and try to, you know, to live out the war where they are? Should they try to escape? And part of what the historical record is that the Gadol Hador at the time, Rav Chaim Ozer, told them that they should not go, that they should stay. But they didn't listen. They went. And whoever went to Shanghai managed to survive. It was not particularly pleasant in Shanghai, but it was better than being killed. And all the altar mirrors that you grew up knowing or that you've met, or these big Talmidei Chachamim that were scattered all over America and Israel who learned in the Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai, they survived because they didn't listen to Rav Chaim Ozer. So someone asked Rav Zelig, well, how did they go to Shanghai if Rav Chaim Ozer said not to, so Das Torah said not to go? So Rav Zelig said, it's a good question. You probably don't realize. It was before Das Torah was invented. You know, so since it was before Das Torah was invented, so they were able to go. So what he meant to say is that Das Torah, as it's used, is not really a halacha concept. And I think it's important to highlight that, because, you know, we have to answer for concepts that come up in Chazal. We have to answer, you know, if someone says, I don't believe in Yafa Torah im Derech Eretz, or something like that. Well, that's a Mishnah. So you have to believe in it. You may want to interpret it differently. You may want to say it to Machlokas. But you have to answer for Divrei Chazal. Whenever you talk about a concept that is not a concept in Chazal, we don't really have to answer for it. Meaning, what we have to do is figure out what does the Torah actually say. We don't have to say, oh, but it's... Meaning, there's no, if we come to a conclusion that the Torah says X, we don't have to say, oh, but there's a concept that people like to talk about called Y, and that goes against X. I don't care what people like to talk about. It has nothing to do with the Torah, right? We only have to answer for actual Torah concepts. I'll throw out a controversial example of this. Right, people talk about what is the Torah view on feminism. So I will tell you, the Torah has no view on feminism. It is not a Torah concept. Right, it's neither for nor against. Meaning, it is certain aspects of the way feminism plays out are certainly against the Torah. Certain aspects of what people might call feminism are probably aligned with the Torah. But as a value, meaning we don't say, oh, we don't think this should be done, but because feminism is a value, therefore we should do it. It's not a Torah value. It's not a Torah value in the positive or the negative. It doesn't help make our Torah decision. Plenty of seats. It doesn't help with our Torah decision making, right? It's simply not a Torah value. So when we talk about Das Torah, it's important, I think, to keep that in mind. Now, the reason that it's an intriguing topic to talk about modern Orthodox view of Das Torah is that conventionally it's been assumed that the more Litvish yeshiva world has subscribed to the current usage of this term Das Torah, that the Gadol B'Yisrael, or the great Torah sage, is the one who can tell you about anything and everything, who can guide you. Plenty of seats. There's over here. Who can guide you on any matter of Torah, on any matter of life, even outside of Torah, and that the modern Orthodox community doesn't believe in this. That we don't subscribe to this. So I could tell you just what I've heard from my Rebbe Rav Schechter, who I think is a leader in the modern Orthodox community. Certainly in yeshiva, he's our senior Rosh Yeshiva, and he's our gadol in many ways. Rav Schechter is what gives to the outside world, or to the more right-wing world, gives our movement to a great degree legitimacy, because there's no denying his greatness in Torah. What I've heard from Rav Schechter is the following analysis of how Das Torah should work. He's a believer in Das Torah, but he thinks that we misunderstand it and we misuse it. He said Rav Soloveitchik used to say that he never heard this term used in Europe. It was not as we pointed out before, from Zelig Epstein, it was not a terminology that was commonly used. He said that everything you do in life can be viewed as a psak halacha. Should I marry this person? Should I not marry this person? It could be viewed as there's a right answer to that question. There's a correct choice to make in life. Should I take this job? Should I not take this job? It's going to hurt my shalom bayis. It's going to help my shalom bayis. How do I handle this situation? There is a correct choice to be made, and most often people can use help making decisions. I know when I've had difficult decisions to make in life, it was extremely confusing, and I felt lost. It was very. I bought books. There's a book by Chip and Dan Heath called I think Choice. How to make choices in life. I was just reading books about how to make choices in life because I was lost. It didn't help me a whit. It didn't help me a single bit. Other than I knew some studies on the topic, but it didn't. So it is useful to have people that you can trust to go to for advice. And we do believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a stakel ba'oraisa ubara alma. He looked at the Torah and he created the world, and therefore, the more one is familiar with the Hashkafas HaTorah, with a sense of what the Torah values are and what the Torah approach is, the better the person's picture is going to be of the situation. However, and this is a very important however, if a person doesn't know, if you're asking about, should I take this job in this bank or a job in that bank, and a person knows nothing about the banking industry, well, then he's not really qualified to offer advice because he's missing the most critical pieces in that decision-making process. Rav Schechter likes to give a mashal of a jigsaw puzzle. He says, if you have a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and you have a person who's able to fill in 995 pieces, he will probably be able to give you a more accurate description of what the picture is supposed to be than someone who's only got 500 pieces. Now, the core picture are the topics at hand. If it's someone who's asking about a shidduch, should I marry this girl, should I not marry this girl? If Shechter says, for most of my students, he says, I can't really help them because I don't know my students as well as I used to, he says. And I certainly don't know the girls that they're dating. So if I don't know the people, it's very, very difficult to be able to guide people when you don't know the core picture. But if it's someone who understands the matter at hand, and on top of that has a knowledge of Torah and a Torah hashkafa, then certainly they are much more equipped to be able to give what Rav Schechter refers to as a psak in terms of life decisions. Now, does that mean that it's a correct psak? That when someone gives a psak halacha that they tell you that you should take this job, that they are right about it? Of course not. Just like when you ask a rabbi a shayla, with the exception of Rabbi Maskin, if you ask a rabbi a shayla, you don't know for sure you're getting the correct psak. Rabbis make mistakes too. And great rabbis make mistakes. Rav Chaim Eiser made mistakes. He told the mir not to go to Shanghai. That was a mistake. Rav Chaim Eiser had a tremendous view of politics and of how things worked and of how the world ran. And he, Rav Soloveitchik, I think it was Rav Soloveitchik that said that he said to Rav Soloveitchik, there will be a Jewish Medina in the land of Israel when hair grows on my palm. It didn't make any sense to him that such a thing could ever happen based on the trajectory of the world and based on what he saw happening in his time. With all of his wisdom, with all of his knowledge, with all of his Das Torah and his political knowledge, he was wrong, because it was such a miracle, the Hakamas HaMedina. It was so beyond the realm of possibility, based on the way people were thinking, that someone even as great as Rav Chaim Ozer could be wrong about it. So of course, when you ask for advice about something, even if you go to the greatest Das Torah in the world and they're familiar with the details of, you know, of the topic that you're asking about, of course they could be wrong. But they have a better chance of being right than someone who doesn't have a proper Torah Hashgacha, or someone who doesn't know anything about the topic at hand. And again, both of those are critical. Someone who understands Torah values and someone who understands the particular topic that you're talking about. Again, if it's a shidduch, the values of that girl, or that who the girl is, who the guy is, and what their character is, and how they fit together. If you're talking about a job, the industry that you're talking about, and what exactly you're leaving, to have all of that knowledge to be able to guide a person, your best chance at a good answer. You know, I could tell you, as someone who's often approached for advice, so first, one of the because I have students, not because I'm wise, but just because students always think their teachers are wise, because it's a really nice thing that students are taught to think that. So one of the things that I try to never do is tell anybody what to do, because I certainly don't want that achrayus. Just to talk through the issues, see if they're missing something, see if there's some factor they haven't taken into account that maybe I could just another brain in the room to think about the different factors. But then I daven a lot that, you know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save me me'etzah ra'ah. It's one of the things we daven for. That you know, when I say my alchets on you know, when my shamnus on Yom Noraim, ya'atznu ra'ah is the part where I start crying, because there are too many people asking me for advice that I don't know that I wasn't ya'atznu ra'ah, that I didn't give bad etzah, that I didn't give bad advice. And you know, obviously I'm on a very low level in terms of the rabbinate and Gedolei Yisrael. I imagine the kinds of things that they're giving advice on, it's even more frightening. But nevertheless, we have to go to people who we believe are sensitive and believe have that bigger picture, have more pieces of as Rav Shach says, more pieces of the jigsaw puzzle than we do. Now, I would like to spend a little bit of time going through Rav Soloveitchik's hesped, not the whole hesped that he gave for Rav Chaim Ozer. First of all, if you read descriptions of the Aguda convention in 1940, it was in the summer of 1940, in August of 1940, it seems that they were so excited. It was in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, why was it in Cincinnati, Ohio? Because the head of the Aguda, Rav Lazer Silver, lived in Cincinnati. That's how he pronounced it. Cincinnati is a Litvisha year. So he lived in Cincinnati. So that's where so they all came to the president. Rav Lazer Silver was a Leibetic person. He was a character. There are a lot of nice, funny stories about him. The famous story about him is that someone was driving him somewhere, and the police officer pulled over the car, and Rav Lazer Silver was sitting in the back, and the police officer, had pulled over the driver, and the driver said, "Officer, I don't know if you realize the person in the back of this car is a very important rabbi. He's the chief rabbi of America." And Rav Lazer Silver rolled down the window and he said, "And Canada!" he was a super genius. His grandson was actually my Rebbe in Keren Biavna, Rav Aaron Silver. Very different kind of personality, exceedingly quiet and unassuming. In fact, when Rav Aaron Silver came to Rav Soloveitchik Shir, he was trying to hide his last name because he didn't want to be judged based on his grandfather. He didn't want the expectations to be there. He didn't want the attention. He was just trying to stay under the radar. It didn't work. But they had this Aguda convention in Cincinnati, and Rav Chaim Ozer had just died, and the descriptions, you know, the write-ups that they have from the Aguda of a gon from Europe, a real European gon, Rav Soloveitchik, who's a chip off the old block, so to speak, of his grandfather, Reb Chaim Brisker. The way they described how fortunate we are to have a real European gon come and address us. This is a 37-year-old Rav Soloveitchik, and they were just tickled that he was going to be addressing their convention. And he was a member of Aguda at that time. It was only after Aguda. Yeah, I think there's. So it happened to be that he changed. It was a turning point. You know, he described this change in Kol Dodi Dofek, but we're not going to get into Rav Soloveitchik's own metamorphosis and, you know, why he changed. He went against his family stance and long-held family stance in Zionism. His father had already moved a little bit, and then we're not going to get into that. But he starts off the Hesped by saying that, you know, I only saw Rav Chaim Ozer a little bit. Rav Chaim Ozer was the rabbi of Vilna, or he wasn't officially the rabbi of Vilna, but he was known to be the rabbi of Vilna and really the rabbi of the world, because he was Rav Soloveitchik's Masada Kiddushin. And Rav Soloveitchik, when he was learning in university, when he was studying in university, we need someone to talk and learning with. There happened to have been some pretty smart people who knew how to learn not far from him in university. That's where he developed a relationship with Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. But he was able to go every once in a while, not a short trip, to Vilna to be able to talk to Rav Chaim Ozer. And he would describe that whenever I would prepare a chiddush and I would work on it, and I would come to Rav Chaim Ozer and I would share my chiddush, and then Rav Chaim Ozer would say, he had a massive library, he would go right over to a shelf, pull a sefer off, open up and say, yeah, it was thought of already. It's right there. Like, he had this encyclopedic knowledge of, like, all of Jewish literature that he was able to recall in, like, a moment. And Rav Soloveitchik had this relationship with him, but he starts the aspect by saying, I only saw a little bit of Rav Chaim Ozer, and he's someone who didn't reveal much of himself to the public. And he said, I saw him at a time that he was being attacked from different corners, and even then, he revealed very little of himself. Very often, when a person is being attacked, so that's when they start becoming more aggressive in defending themselves. And he said, he doesn't refer to what the attacks were about, but he says, please forgive me in advance for not being able to paint an accurate picture of Rav Chaim Ozer. And he said, we need to be focused right now on greater matters relating to Klal Yisrael, but I'm going to do my best to share with you who Rav Chaim Ozer was. And before he begins describing who Rav Chaim Ozer was, he quotes a Gemara in Moed Katan. The Gemara tells us that when Rav Huna died, they were unable to remove the bed that he was on from the house because the doorway was too narrow and the bed was too wide. It's a strange Gemara. So the Gemara says they thought, well, maybe we should move Rav Huna over to another bed and then we'll be able to fit him through the door. And they said, no, that's not proper kavod. The kavod of a mace is bimitaso harishona, and it's only proper kavod. So they said, well, maybe we should try to take him out through the roof or some other way. And they said, no, chachum kvodo derech pesach, the proper kavod for a chachum is to go out through the doorway. And, as I said, kvodo bimita rishona. So what did they do? So they decided to expand the doorway. They widened the doorway. And that way they were able to get Rav Huna out. So only Rav Soloveitchik would see the depth in this Gemara. Rav Soloveitchik said, you understand, Rav Huna was someone who was so great that the people in his generation had no conception of his greatness. They couldn't. They didn't have the kalim to perceive. They didn't have the wherewithal and the breadth to be able to perceive how great he was and the full profundity of his character and of his knowledge. And therefore, we have in our mind pictures of greatness. You know, we have in our mind what our preconceived notion of what a great person is, what a Talmud Chacham is, what a Gadol is. So people would naturally try to fit Rav Huna into their own perception. And he says, that's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that when Rav Huna died, they didn't bring his bed out because people were on too low a level to comprehend his Gadlus. The Pesach that people had in their mind to be able to fit Rav Huna through was too narrow. People were too narrow-minded to possibly understand who the man was. And they said, but Chacham Kvodo Derech Pesach. You know, he never got caught up in the emotion of the moment. He never compromised even on a kutzo shel yud of anything. And we have to be honest about who he was. It has to be Derech Pesach. We can't try to make up a story about who Rav Huna was. And that's how Rav Soloveitchik understood bringing him through the roof, this way, that way. No, Chacham Kvodo Derech Pesach. We have to be straightforward and honest about who the person was to the best of our ability. But to explain him to the people, you would need to change his image to conform to people's perceptions of what a great rabbinic leader ought to be or should be. He said our responsibility is to describe him as he was, not as people think of great people. You know, you think of a Hasidish Rebbe, a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva, like we have our pictures of what a great person is. It's not responsible to describe someone who is more complex than that and who is more broad than that in such a narrow way. So what did they do? They broke open the door more widely so you could fit through. Meaning, it's our avodah to broaden our conception of what godless can actually be. And we can't change Rav Huna, retrofit him to fit into our perspective of what a gadol is. We have to broaden our own perspective in order to be able to understand and fully absorb what he was. So Rav Soloveitchik used that as his hakdama to the hesped for Rav Chaim Moser, his introduction to the eulogy for Rav Chaim Moser. And he said, none of us can really fully understand, but our job is to broaden our understanding, our capabilities of understanding, so that we can get a better picture of who Rav Chaim Moser was. What does this have to do with Das Torah? Nothing yet. Then, Rav Soloveitchik says, and I assume, did you pick this topic because of this week's Parsha? The entire Hesped was built on where Rav Soloveitchik paints two pictures of the tzitz and the choshen of the Kohen Gadol. And he says it's remarkable. You know, the tzitz represents, in Rav Soloveitchik's view, the intellect. He says, Hatzitz hayu meratza al atumos. Hatzitz hayu kulo kodesh l'Hashem. Hatzitz nason al mitzcho shel Aaron keneged merkaz haseichel v'hadas. The tzitz was on the brain, it was on the head. It's where the intellect resides. The tzitz represents the Torah genius. The tzitz represents the person who knows Kala Torah Kula, who has a mastery of the entirety of Torah. The choshen goes al halev. Hachoshen hoya alev Aaron. Merkaz ha'ava v'achiba liYisrael. The place where one loves and develops a sense of fondness for the Jewish people. And all of the names of the Shvatim, all of the names of all the tribes of Israel, are on the Choshen. Because the Choshen represents my love for the Jewish people. It represents the Kohen Gadol's understanding of how much he ought to love the Jewish people. And he said the remarkable thing, that tzitz paskin talacha, the Choshen would be who you'd go to for advice. Right? You go to people who you love and who love you for advice. Because they're likely not to lead you astray and not to be biased by their own self-interest. That's always a wiser thing to do. You know, sometimes Talmidim will come to me and they'll ask for advice, and I'll often ask, if they're married, I'll ask, what does your wife think? And if they're not married, I'll ask, what do your parents think? And I remember when I was teaching in high school with college-age boys, and post-college is much better. When I was teaching in high school, the high school boy would ask for advice, and I would say, what do your parents think? The response was usually like, why does anyone care? What my parents? What are you talking about? My parents? Like they don't know anything, you know? And I was like, Tatala, listen, I love you. Your parents love you even more. You know, they may have an even more vested interest in your well-being than I do. They may be even less biased than I am in terms of seeing to it that you'll be successful. It is a very important question. You want to go to the person who has the choshen to seek advice. And the Rav Soloveitchik said in this hesped, the remarkable thing was that the same Kohen who paskin the halacha also gave the advice on communal matters. It was the same Kohen that knew Kala Torah Kula that was also the person who people would seek guidance from when it came to matters of the community. The same Baki in halacha was a Baki in political decision making. And people misunderstand this, I think. Look, I can't claim to understand Rav Soloveitchik. I never met Rav Soloveitchik. Everything I have is klisheni. It's all through my rebbeim, so I can't claim to have a better understanding. But I'm just reading the write up in Hapardes of the hesped that he gave. The way you hear this quoted often is that Rav Soloveitchik was made a strong case for Das Torah. He did, but not the way it's commonly used. He made a strong case for Das Torah when that Das Torah also had deep political knowledge. meaning if they were going to guide the community in terms of what the next steps should be, they had to have a full understanding of everything, of the Torah, the Tzitz, but also of the Choshen. They had to have that sense of the Choshen. Rav Soloveitchik writes that there was a letter, Me'anshe Rainus, from one of the Kadmonim, where they asked about two questions. They asked one question in Hilchos Treifos, detailed halacha in Yeridaya, and they also asked a question about how to deal with a false Messiah. And he said the juxtaposition of the two questions was stunning to him, that they believed that the same person who can answer your question in Hilchos Treifos is also the same person that can answer your question about how should a community deal with a false Messiah. Because one is the Tzitz, one is the Choshen, and they go hand in hand. You know, the discussion between the, or the distinction rather, that people have made, Rav Soloveitchik says in 1940, that people have made between the Gaon Hadar and the Manhig Hadar, the genius or the Torah giant of the generation and the leader of the generation, he says, that's a mistake. It's an improper approach. The Gaon Hadar and the Manhig Hadar are best when they're the same person. He says, "E efshar lelev liosafug ava liYisrael belimoach kadosh laHashem." A person cannot have a fully saturated heart with love for the Jewish people if his mind is not also dedicated to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Ein avas Yisrael beli kedushas Yisrael. It's a remarkable point. He says because when you love someone, part of loving them is knowing who they are, is appreciating their greatness. You can't understand the greatness of a Jew unless you understand Kedusha. Because when you see another Jew, what you should see is a walking Sefer Torah. That every Jew has Kedusha Yisrael. Every Jew has the Torah Kasu V'aluach Libecha. Every Jew learned with the Malach in the womb. That we, if a person can appreciate Kedusha, a person has a sensitivity for Kedusha, then they can genuinely love another Jew because they can genuinely understand just how holy the Jewish people are. And therefore, it requires that moach in order to be able to appreciate Kedusha Satorah, in order to appreciate the Kedusha of other people. And Rav Chaim Ozer was the blend of the Tzitz and the Choshen. He said people who weren't well-versed in Torah can't possibly interpret the letters on the Choshen. You know, and the way the Choshen would deliver its messages is that the letters would light up. But you could jumble the letters however you want and make it say whatever message you want. If you weren't a Gaon Hadar, then you weren't going to be able, if you weren't the genius of the generation, you weren't going to be able to derive the right message. So he said, Rav Chaim Ozer held tightly to the Choshen when others wanted to pull it away from him. And he says, we have to follow his parting instruction to hold on to that Choshen, to make sure that the Torah giants of the generation are, when well-educated in matters of politics and in matters that they're giving advice about, are sought after for their advice. The question is, do we have anybody like that? Meaning, do we have people that are so well-versed in Torah and also so well-versed in matters of the world? So they're few and far between. They're few and far between. Rav Schachter always makes the point of highlighting, we don't believe in oracles. We don't believe in just going to someone and because they're a holy person, they can just tell you what to do and give you advice and that, you know, it's just Hashem is talking through their mouth or whatever. We don't believe in that. That's not necessarily a Jewish concept. We believe that the more pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that he has, the better he'll be able to give advice. And, you know, the greatest Talmud Chacham will know how to interpret the information better than others. I asked Rav Soloveitchik, he came to one of my son's Shavuot. My son got married. He missed the wedding because he had to be Masada Kiddushin by a different Talmud of his. So he felt bad, so he came to one of the Sheva Brachos, which was great, because at my son's wedding, I couldn't sit with him and schmooze with him, but at my son's Sheva Brachos, I could. So I said, I was asked to speak about Das Torah. So he said, oh, Rav Soloveitchik's husband for Rav Chaim Ozer, you got to read it. So I said, okay, can you summarize it? So he said, yeah, we don't believe in oracles, and the Choshen and the Tzitz, and they go together, he said that, I said, does that mean that because a person is well-trained in Torah, analysis, they'll be able to interpret information more accurately, meaning that they'll be better equipped to analyze things, because all they do all day is analyze things. And he said that's part of it, that's definitely part of it, that a person whose brain is very sharp, whose mind has been trained to find flaws in logic and to identify how to categorize things, and all of the skills that you use in Torah learning itself, it's definitely part of it. It definitely helps a person. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that that there's much disagreement among the Torah world about this. Rav Lichtenstein, when he spoke about it, I see it's kind of late, so I'm not going to go through Rav Lichtenstein's whole piece, but Rav Lichtenstein spoke about it. He had a comment, you know, he was attacking somebody, there was a, which he says in his introduction, I don't want you to try to identify who I'm attacking. That's Lashon Hara. But he was clearly, he said he's attacking somebody. I mean, there was something that he was very upset about people who don't have, he thought, didn't have even proper Torah knowledge, giving advice about things that they knew nothing about. Rav Lichtenstein said, I don't know who he was attacking. I have a guess, but I don't know who he was attacking. But he said apparently one of the people that he thought should not be giving political advice and guidance because knew nothing about politics, he said also has tremendous lacking in his Torah knowledge. He said that to be a member of the Sanhedrin, you had to know Shivim Lashon, you had to know 70 languages. He said, I've heard this Rosh Yeshiva say that he skips the Diktuk Rashis because he doesn't understand them. So he says, even his one Lashon he doesn't understand, the one language. If you're going to skip the Diktuk Rashis, then it means you don't even have a mastery of one language. So you have to have Shivim Lashon. Can't possibly be someone that you're going to go to for Das Torah. His point was, if there's no Das, how can there be Das Torah? Meaning you at least need a certain sense of Das. But in the context of that scathing analysis, I mean, there's a lot of analysis because it's Rav Lichtenstein, but in the context of that, he said, if everyone was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, then I would sign up for the concept of Das Torah also the way it's used. Why? Because what did he identify about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that he was so willing to say, I would follow in a second? When Rav Lichtenstein moved to Israel, his father-in-law, Rav Soloveitchik, was very angry at him. I think there was even some time that he wouldn't talk to him. He was very, very upset. He really wanted to hand over the yeshiva and the reins of the yeshiva to him, and he thought that he was making a big mistake. Probably not related to that, Rav Lichtenstein felt he needed a Rebbe in Israel, that having his Rebbe in America was not enough now that he lived in Israel, so he chose Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach as his Rebbe, as the person that he would go to for advice. I just mentioned last night that one of the Talmidim of Rav, or maybe today, one of the Talmidim of Rav Lichtenstein asked him, you know, you're so big, why do you need to go to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? You're such a Torah giant. And Rav Lichtenstein said, the gap between Rav Shlomo Zalman and me is much, much greater than the gap between me and you. And you still come to me for advice. Which Rav Lichtenstein, he had a tendency to overrate the level of his Talmidim. He just didn't understand necessarily how non-geniuses' minds worked. But so I'm not sure that that's true, that assessment of the gap isn't necessarily true. But that he certainly, he said that he felt that way. But what was it about Rav Shlomo Zalman that Rav Lichtenstein said, I'll even try to find the quote here, if I can find it, that Rav Lichtenstein said he would sign up for Das Torah if it was Rav Shlomo Zalman, if everyone was like Rav Shlomo Zalman. So there's a few characteristics that he highlighted. Most importantly, I think, are two things. First, that he never paskined on something until he understood the entire matter thoroughly. He wrote a book on electricity after studying how electricity works. He would paskin on medical shilas after talking to every doctor he could that he trusted who can describe to him all of the details of the person's medical condition. Doctors would often comment after talking to him that they felt he would repeat back after they would educate him, he would repeat back. So if I'm understanding correctly, and he would summarize everything they said, and the doctors would often say that they felt that Rav Shlomo Zalman understood the medicine better than they did by the time he had processed the information. Meaning he made sure to have a mastery of anything that he would paskin on. That's quality number one. Quality number two is that he said, I don't know, when he didn't know. That he never said, well, I'm Das Torah, and therefore I have to have an answer to everything. If he didn't know, he said he doesn't know. And those two qualities, more than anything else, we're looking at some other ideas, but more than anything else, is what really determines a worthy Das Torah. I often tell my children, growing up in my house, there's a certain reverence that they always understood to have for Rav Schachter. Remember when one of my children was very young, they were looking at my wedding album, and they saw a picture under the chuppah of Shechter and the Sadeh Kedushin. So one of my children said, oh, there's Ima, there's Abba. We were still young enough that we still looked like we did. And my wife still does, but I somewhat resembled the guy under the chuppah. And one of my children said, is that Hashem? Like, no. Close, but not quite exactly. But I always say to my children, who's the greatest Talmud Chacham you've ever met? And they'll say, Rav Schachter. And I'll say, and who says, I don't know, more often than anybody you've ever met? And they'll say, Rav Schachter. He always says, I don't know. Now, I don't know means a lot of different things. Sometimes it means can't really talk about it. Sometimes but very often, let's just say, I don't know. I remember a conversation I had with Rav Meir Tversky. There was a difficult shaila that came up in the community. I got a knock on my door one night, like 10, 10:30 at night, and there's a Jew that lives a block and a half away from me who's not Shomer Torah Mitzvos. But a number of members of my shul had befriended him, so we became somewhat friendly. And he knocked on my door, and he had tears in his eyes. And he was clearly very emotional. And I said, Steve, what's the matter? And he said, my mother-in-law just died. I'm like, mother or mother-in-law? He was very teary. So he said, my mother-in-law just died. And he said, I was so close with her. She was the greatest woman. And he said, I don't know where to turn. I said, okay, well, you came to the right place. We'll arrange for a Jewish burial, a funeral. We'll do everything properly. And we were able to arrange for a burial, for a proper Jewish funeral. And as I was going through, the process with him, it was going to be graveside. Everything was going to be graveside. It occurred to me that Steve's last name is Cohen. And Steve said, yeah, so we'll get a minion. It will be me, it will be my two sons. It's going to be, a minion of Kohanim at the grave. And he's a son-in-law, not a son. So I didn't know what to do. So I went to yeshiva. I happened to have not been in YU yet at the time. But I was teaching there once a week. I was giving a class there once a week on Wednesdays. It happened to have been Wednesday. So I went, it was Tuesday night that it came to me. The funeral was going to be Thursday. I went to yeshiva. I saw Rav Tversky. Rav Schachter wasn't there. I saw Rav Tversky. And I asked him, what should I do with this? And Rav Tversky paused and thought for what to me seemed like an eternity, because he thinks so carefully before he speaks. And then he looked up, after what must have been, 5 minutes of silent thought, and he said, I don't know. I said, so what should I do? At which point, he paused for another 5 minutes of silent thought and looked up and said, I don't know. So that was that. That didn't help me much, but the integrity to tell me that he didn't know. He then, the next week when I was in yeshiva, he tracked me down to ask me what I actually did in the end of the day, which is not a story for now, but sorry. but in short, a lot of people believe that Rav Soloveitchik changed his mind, because after all, kol do dido fake, he changed his whole view on Zionism. He went against the Das Torah of his grandfather on Zionism and on all of, on this very important life issue. So it must be that he rejected this entire concept of Das Torah. I don't see the evidence for that. Meaning, you can hold that there is this concept if you define it in this very careful way. the jigsaw puzzle that involves having all the Torah pieces and also having all of the pieces or as many of the pieces about the matter at hand. If it's a medical issue, about the medicine. If it's a legal issue, about the law. If it's a business issue, about the nature of that business. If it's a shidduch, about the boy and about the girl. And that's what Das Torah means. And you can still hold that when the right thing to do is to go to the Das Torah to get that advice, and yet at the same time, he might be wrong. It's the same as any other Pesach Halacha. You can go to a rabbi and ask for advice and ask for Pesach Halacha on something in Hilchos Shabbos, and he might be wrong. And you know what? If he's wrong, then the Halacha is not like him. There's only one area of Halacha where if the Beis Din said something that was absolutely wrong, then the Halacha is like them anyway. That's Kiddush HaChodesh. Beyond that, it doesn't exist. If he's wrong, he's wrong. But we try to take our chances with the most qualified people that we possibly can. I have to say, Rav Muskin has alluded to this, that it was a great point of pride in our community during COVID, that our community was very good, very strong for the most part, about following our Das Torah. Because we trusted that our Das Torah not only had a sense of Torah, but they also had a sense of doing the research and finding out what the scientific community had to say with the best available information that we had at that time. Was a lot of that information flawed? Of course it was. It was also new to us. But we understood that we had to follow leadership, responsible rabbinic leadership. And that's a great point of pride. Meaning no one should have us believe that the modern Orthodox community is not a Das Torah community. I don't think that's true. I think that we are, with the definition, as Rav Schechter, based on Rav Soloveitchik's husband, Rav Chaim Ozer, has clearly defined it. So, Be'ez Hashem, we should follow our Torah leadership and be able to, and daven, that Hashem should give them the wisdom to guide us in the proper way to be able to make all of the right decisions in life. Okay, good to talk, everybody.